This week's episode of PFW's Chicago Football Podcast brought to you by Loot Crate. If you go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, use our promo code Shaw, you're going to get $3 off your first crate. Can't think of a better holiday gift. Get somebody a subscription to Loot Crate and use our promo code for it, because they're going to get every month a crate full of awesome gear from Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, Star Wars, and more. This month's crate, their first one for December, it's Revolution time. So there's going to be exclusive items that you can't get anywhere else if you're an Assassin's Creed fan, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more. So go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W. Use that promo code. You get a t-shirt in every crate along with a lot of other cool stuff. Go ahead and get your Loot Crate and tune in now, because it's time to talk some Bears. Welcome to PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Kevin Fishbane here from our beautiful Crystal Lake studios, joined by my executive producer, Dan Mott. Associate producer John Solly is out on assignment today. Actually, I don't know where he is. I just always wanted to say out on assignment. You can follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Follow all of our Bears content at Bears_insider. And go online to profootballweekly.com/Bears for all of our work. And add us on Snapchat, Bears_insider. And do me a favor. Go to iTunes. Look up Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Click subscribe. Click the 5-star rating. Give us a nice little review. We'd really appreciate it. It is Packers week. We got a special Packers preview podcast. All the alliteration that you can fit into your podcast. Two guests today. That's how lucky you are. It is the holiday time. I want to give back. So I'm giving you two guests. Emily Kaplan from the MMQB and Aaron Nagler from PackersNews.com. We'll talk Bears. We'll talk Packers. We'll talk the rivalry. And give you our picks at the end of the show. First up, though, quick recap of what I saw in Detroit. I saw a lot of snow in Detroit. I had two canceled flights. I know people love to hear about journalists' troubles getting home. But the game itself inside Ford Field, when I got there, by the way, my Uber driver, Dan, so I took I stayed in Ann Arbor for the weekend and took an Uber to Ford Field on Sunday morning. I was very nervous about this Uber just because it was a long drive. It was snowing. It snowed all night. My driver's name was Emery.
Oh, that's a
And I'm thinking, like, is this a good omen? Is this a bad omen? Where's the karma here?
I don't know.
Is he hoping that when I get in the car, I'm going to be a dynamic playmaker who will get me to Ford Field quickly? But no, he was just a perfectly fine Uber driver, got me to Ford Field safely. And I watched the Bears let one slip away again. And, you know, we're at the point now where we look for silver linings with this team, because what else are you going to do when they're 3-10 and their best players are all in injured reserve? So here's your silver lining. They were down 13-3 in Detroit against the leader of the division, and they came back and should have at least tied the game, maybe won the game. In those final seconds, and they lost. So, you know, I wrote a story after the game. John Fox says the difference between – or when we asked him what impresses you about the Lions, John Fox said they win close games. Well, the flip side of that is if you lose close games, you're not a very good team. And there are some people who are going to look at the positives of – these close losses, and I get it, and I'm doing it right now by saying, hey, at least they fought back and almost beat the division leaders. But when you're 1-5 in games decided by 6 points or less, it doesn't mean you're almost there. It means you're not good, because good teams finish. Good teams close out games. Good teams don't have back-to-back holding penalties on the final drive. Good teams don't drop a pass, a tough pass, but a catchable pass, on fourth down with an opportunity to, again, try to tie the game and send it to overtime. Good teams don't have a false start followed by a delay game, which they had earlier in the game. there's tons of reasons why the Bears have that, but they're just not good right now. They're not good enough to win some of these games. So I think you can take the good and take the bad, if I'm going to use a lyric from a song here. The good is they're fighting. You watch the Jets. You turn on there's some other teams, the Rams. Those are teams that just gave up. The Bears aren't doing that. They aren't doing what they did in 2014. So that's a good thing. And you see guys like Cravon LeBlanc making big plays. You see Jordan Howard, Leonard Floyd, and Cody Whitehair making this look like a very good draft class. You see Matt Barkley dropping dimes. You see these good things. And you see the fact that, look, they covered the spread. They came really close to being the Detroit Lions. You can still say all of that while flipping it around and saying this is not a good team because they can't win close games. And you can even also then say, well, they all have all these guys injured. You could talk about all these things. These things can all be spoken about at the same time. You don't need to only be in one camp. You can say the Bears showed fight. The Bears are not good. They're not good because a lot of guys are hurt.
I think the thing that frustrates me the most is that it's not like these guys all went down. Well, some of them went down in one game. It seemed like every week there was a new brutal injury to the Bears. But these guys have all been out sort of staggered with enough time to start getting some of these other guys to perform more. And like you said, we're not seeing it. And is that because they're just not that good of athletes? Is it coaching? I mean, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I think they're just not a good team. I mean, they're not deep enough. They're so young. I mean, you look at defense. You had Leonard Floyd, who's your first-round pick, who should be out there. You had Nick Kwiatkowski starting. That's a fourth-round rookie. John Timu is an undrafted second-year player. Your starting safeties were a fourth-round rookie and an undrafted second-year player, who was then benched and replaced by a fifth-round second-year player. Your corners were Cravon LeBlanc, an undrafted rookie, Bryce Callahan, an undrafted second-year player. You go to the offensive side of the ball, you have guys that, you look at your receivers, Cam Meredith, a second-year undrafted guy, Josh Bellamy was a journeyman and a special teamer, Deontay Thompson, a kickoff returner, Daniel Brown, an undrafted tight end they claimed off waivers, Ben Broniker, an undrafted rookie from Harvard, Matt Barkley hadn't started a game in the NFL. These are the guys that are out there. It's not a good team. Which is why you say why they don't win the close games, but also you got to give them credit for making it close.
And teaser alert, if you tune into WCIU on Saturday morning at 10:30, we're going to be talking about do these guys stick around and are some of these guys the future of the team and can they build off these guys?
Yeah, WCIU, the U.
That's right.
At 10:30 on Saturday morning. Yeah, because I think that are these guys flashers in the pan? I think it shows a lot from Ryan Pace that he's able to find some of these guys off a scrap heap and they can be good. But is it just a one-year thing, or can a Cravon LeBlanc actually be a starting corner when this team is contending? That's what you're looking at. Who's going to be a part of the nucleus when the Bears are in a position to make the playoffs? Leonard Floyd, absolutely. Cody Whitehair, yes. Jordan Howard, yes. These guys are draft picks. These undrafted guys – is this just they're thrust in the spotlight so they're going to make some plays? Or are they actually good players that the Bears have found that could be a part of the conversation next year? So that's what some of the things that we'll learn and some of the things that the Bears are obviously evaluating in these final three games as they go down. So they got the Packers on Sunday. It's a noon kickoff on Fox. And then the following week, Christmas Eve, so Saturday game, they'll host Washington. And then the season finale in Minnesota against the Vikings. And I want to bring in a special guest right now to talk a little bit about the Packers and talk about kind of big picture look at the Bears. I want to bring in her first time on the program, special guest Emily Kaplan of the MMQB. You can follow her on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. Emily, thanks for joining the show. Your first time on the program.
It is. It's quite the honor. I feel like this is my big step. I'm finally a big time in Chicago if I'm on the show.
That's right. So Emily is somewhat still new to Chicago, I would say. And I will start with this. You moved to Chicago in April. And since you moved here, the Bears are 3-10. What do you have to say to Bears fans?
I can frame that differently. Since I've moved here, the Chicago Cubs have won their first World Series
wow.
in 108 years.
Yes, that is a professional move. Nicely done.
you know what, I'm all about the spin zone. But throughout my career, I've kind of called myself the Forrest Gump of journalism. Like, wherever I went, something big happened. I went to Penn State at a very interesting time. I was in Boston interning there in the year of Tim Tebow, Aaron Hernandez, Sox and Bruins, both in the championships, right up to the marathon. So I just knew something big would happen in Chicago. So you're welcome.
There you go. And actually, a couple weeks ago, we had a guest on, Tim Baffo, who every time we talked about how bad the Bears were, he would pause and say, but guys, the Cubs won the World Series. So you are right in there with the way that Chicago sports fans certainly think. Before we get to the Bears, I want to talk with you about the Packers, because you just spent a week in Green Bay with the MMQB clan. What was that like? What was the being in Green Bay for a full game week, and then obviously a very exciting and important win for the Packers?
Yeah, I can tell you that Green Bay is on a lot of people's bucket list as a football fan, and you go there maybe for the weekend and you see some cool bars and you see a really cool vibe of pomp and pageantry, but there's something very special about being in Green Bay on a Tuesday night in December, because there's literally nothing to do. I think it makes it one of the most unique football venues just for a team, because of the relationship that the players have with the community. It's so tight-knit, because I think they're all in this together. There's nothing to do there.
And the looking at the Green Bay Packers, and I'll talk about this later in the show with Aaron Nagler, are the Packers back?
I don't know. I wish I could give you an answer. That game was so weird, because you look at it, and it was so convincing, right? It seemed like a really big margin of victory. It's never quite in doubt. They looked so much better than the Seahawks, but it was really a fluky game. I mean, K.J. Wright was kind of slipping all over the place. They had a Deshaun Shedd, who they're really picking on, and he looked like he was running through quicksand. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. And two of the five interceptions were like completely ridiculous bounces, you know, off of Doug Baldwin's face mask or off of a cornerback's arm. So all Packer fans are probably hating me right now because I'm making excuses for their win. But I just have to say that, you know, they looked okay. I think I still have a lot of questions, especially about Aaron Rodgers' health. I mean, watching him just in the locker room afterwards, he was hurting. He was, you know, it's his left hamstring or his right ankle or some combination of both. And I'm curious about how he's going to hold up in this end of season stretch.
With that said, because you saw a Seattle team that I think some people feel could still be the favorite with home field advantage, how do you kind of power rank the top teams in the NFC at this point?
Okay, you want a hot take?
Ooh, I do.
I think this is still Dallas's to lose. I think that they're the team with the momentum from the season, and I'm not buying the fact that Dak Prescott has hit the rookie wall. They're my number one. I still think the Seahawks are number two. I think they're the most complete on offense and defense, and I think this game was an aberration. And after that, I mean, the Giants are playing pretty hot, but whoever comes out of the NFC North, and I think it's going to be the Lions, but the Packers could be right behind them, they could challenge. You know, if they're coming on hot at the end of the year, that's the type of team you don't want to play in January.
Well, I'm somewhat biased, as my best gauge of some of these teams is how they look against the Bears.
Sure.
And the Lions did not look very good. And even the Giants a few weeks ago didn't look that great in that game against the Bears, so I guess I'm curious to see what the Packers look like on Sunday when they play the Bears. Did you get any vibe? Did people talk about the Bears out there? I sometimes think the Bears fans talk about the Packers more than the Packers fans talk about the Bears. But did anybody, like, was it like, were Michigan fans just like to chant about Ohio State even if they're playing Iowa? Like, do they still talk about the Bears up there?
You know what? I really regret that we didn't listen to our editor, who had a great social experiment idea of someone just wearing a Brian Urlacher jersey around and seeing what would happen around town. So we didn't complete that, so I don't really have a firm answer for you. I will say that it's probably the biggest rivalry, but right now this year, I think they're just concerned with any visiting team that comes in, and they were just harping about Seahawks fans.
I like to poke fun at Bears PR, and they just, in their weekly release, it said, this is the Bears and Packers' 1,924th meeting. That would make it the oldest rivalry in all of sports. It's actually the 194th meeting, for those of you keeping score at home. Joined right now by Emily Kaplan of the MMQB. Follow her on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. And one of the cool things Emily's been doing this year is writing weekly stories from the college realm, taking kind of a NFL lens at some of the top prospects, some of the ways that the pre-draft process works. And big picture question, because we'll go, I guess, a little bit vague here. But the way college coaches and college players or evaluate draft prospects, I've always found very different than the way NFL people look at it. Because I'll watch college football on Saturdays, like, wow, that guy's amazing. And then you look at the NFL draft boards, and that guy might be all over the place. From your experience going to these college campuses, writing stories about some of these players, how do you view that dynamic and the difference between the way the guys are viewed in college versus how they could be viewed in the pros?
Yeah, one of the things that I've heard multiple times, especially from the NFL side, is that stylistically, there's a growing divide between the college game and the NFL game, and that's really affecting quarterbacks. It's also really affecting some of the defensive players who are kind of, you know, playing in the spread defense. So, against the spread offense, rather. So I think that, you know, we all get really excited when we see a player totally light it up. Like Baker Mayfield's a perfect example. He's a Heisman finalist. He's doing great. But you hear NFL guys talk about him, and they're like, he doesn't have an arm strength. You know, there's no way that this guy can play in the NFL. So there is this kind of growing divide. I think so much of it in college game these days predicates on the spread game. And, you know, that's kind of these very basic, simplistic plays and guys who can just scramble. And that just doesn't hold up in the NFL.
When you look at the Bears specifically, mm-hmm. and what they're looking at in the draft, and obviously they are going to be looking at quarterback, whether that's in the first round, second, third, fourth, they're going to take quarterback at some point. From your experience talking to GMs and scouts and head coaches and just covering the league for a few years, what do you think is kind of the best philosophy for a team like a Bears in terms of when to draft a quarterback, especially in a draft like this where there is no Andrew Luck?
Yeah, I'm going to speak specifically to this year, and I feel very strongly that the Bears should not pick a quarterback in the first round. I think the unanimous consensus among evaluators is that this is a very weak top-heavy class. It's pretty deep that you can get a value pick maybe in the third round, the fourth round, but the guy everyone's talking about right now is the hottest name is Mitch Trubisky, who's played less than a year. He's been a starter for one entire year, and everyone's just scrambling to find information about him. And if that's your best bet, then this a good class. So I think that there's so many other dynamic talents that they can get with that really, top five pick that they're going to get. And I think they should wait and get a quarterback and, maybe keep Matt Barkley for a year and have this guy. Maybe, I know all Bears fans everywhere are cringing, but keep Jay Cutler here and let this guy groom. But don't expect any of these guys to come in and start right away and be a stud.
Yeah, Bears fans will see it in an interesting way, because I think as much as they want a quarterback so badly, they still have such brutal memories of Cade McNown. And that's going to keep some Bears fans from wanting a quarterback in the first round. Speaking of the Bears, Emily, have you kept up with some of this news and reports and rumors about that they should get a president of football operations in Hallis Hall?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit. This being said that way and everyone denying it, I think there's no question that the ownership is wondering what direction they're going under Ryan Pace and John Fox. But I just know that everybody around the football community, when you talk to other GMs and really respected GMs, everyone's so high on Ryan Pace. So I think I'd like to think that they're going to keep kind of current structure for one more year. And then if it's really not working, then they're going to go in and make some wholesale changes.
And I'll get into this a little bit more, my take on that, but I agree. I don't think it's ever a good idea to bring in a football guy when you already have a general manager. We'll wrap up with this, Emily. You caught a lot of heat for your hot take that you did not like Chicago deep dish pizza when you moved here, but then you went to Pequod's. Have you revised said take?
Okay. I don't think it's pizza, but if you're into something ooey and quiche and you want it, the place to go is Pequod's, and it's far better than any of the other options, and it made me almost a believer. So Pequod's, you have my vote. I will be a return customer, but I'm sorry, Lamal Nadi's, I'm never going to be convinced.
All right, there you have it. Pizza connoisseur and MMQB writer Emily Kaplan. Follow her on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. Thanks for joining the program.
Thanks for having me.
Alrighty then. Thanks again to Emily. Quick apologies there for some connection issues, but we got it all good. We got kind of the main points from her. Really interesting to get that take on the college versus pro, because that's something we're going to talk about more and more on this podcast in the next 5 to 6 weeks as we get into January. We start watching some of these guys, start figuring out who the top quarterbacks are going to be. I will be at the Senior Bowl looking at some of the senior quarterbacks. And then, of course, as we get into the combine, quick moment for one of our sponsors, that is Fan Essentials. Go to fanessentials.net and you're going to be able to get 30% off your first month's of team gear that's delivered right to your doorstep. Go to the checkout. Use our promo code Chicago. You get 30% off your first month at fanessentials.net. You pick your favorite sports team, and they deliver the gear right to your door. They find the sports gear, so you don't have to. It's a great gift idea for any sports fan out there. I think if you're in Chicago, I think both baseball teams would be worthy. If you want to get someone some Cubs gear from fanessentials.net, I think, obviously, World Series chance. Even if you want to get someone some White Sox gear, I think there's some reasons to be excited about the team on the South Side. So go to fanessentials.net, 30% off your first month if you use our promo code Chicago at checkout. So before we go to the Aaron Nagler interview, I want to give my brief scorching take on this whole football czar, president of football operations thing. So this all started from a report from CBS that Bill Polian could be a guy the Bears bring in to oversee football operations. And the report's been completely refuted by both the Bears, by Bill Polian, by folks at ESPN. Here's the thing with this. If you start over, you get a GM and a head coach, and you just want a clean sweep like the Bears did 2 years ago, then I understand the idea of bringing in somebody to oversee football operations, somebody who has been through the league, who might not make the personnel decisions, the draft picks, but is there in the room as a consultant. I get that. However, the Bears have a general manager. His name is Ryan Pace, and he's done a pretty good job, all things considered. When you look at the hand he's been dealt, his draft picks have looked good. I think this year's free agents, when they were healthy and not suspended, have looked good. He's got a good grasp on things. You have a head coach in John Fox who you could say what you will about the coaching, but this guy has been around the league for a long time. Why would you bring in somebody to oversee this operation? All it would do is undermine what Pace and Fox are doing. Certainly, it would undermine what Ryan Pace is doing, because that is an awkward situation when you have a GM and then you said, hey, Ryan, you're doing a great job, but we're going to bring in Bill Polian or Ernie Accorsi or, you know, whoever you want to bring in, so-and-so who used to be a GM, and he's just going to help you out. Well, usually in those circumstances, if things continue to sour, that guy then just becomes the GM and they start over. So I don't think it'd be a good look for the Bears to do that. And it's very possible that this rant is for nothing because the Bears have never even considered it. I don't know. But just because the report's been out there, I wanted to kind of give you kind of my opinion on the whole football czar thing. I think a lot of Bears fans have opinions about Ted Phillips, and that's where this comes from. He is the team president, but he's not a football guy. That's okay as long as Ted Phillips only focuses on the business side of things, which is what he's been doing for the past few years. And Ryan Pace has given the keys to the football operation. So, you know, if you want to start over, fine, go ahead. That makes sense. You bring in a football guy, he brings in the GM, he brings in the head coach, those three work together. That can happen, that can make sense. But you can't do it now when you already have a GM. It just leads to some awkward situations. So, again, that's just a take on something that was a report that was already debunked and a report that might not even be in line with the Bears thinking. But as Emily also alluded to, the Bears are trying to figure out something to get this thing on the right track. All right, back to Packers week, Bears-Packers 194th regular season meeting. I actually joked about this, Dan. I've covered the Bears since 2013. I have covered more Bears wins at Lambeau, 2, than Bears wins at Ford Field, 0. In fact, I've covered more Bears wins at Lambeau than Bears wins over the Lions, period, which would be 1. So Bears-Packers, even with the Packers being better, still a generally good game. And to break down the Packers from the Green Bay side of things, we go behind enemy lines with Aaron Nagler.
I figure the best person to take us behind enemy lines this week is Aaron Nagler, covers the Packers for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Find all of his stuff at PackersNews.com and on Twitter at Aaron Nagler. He tweets maybe once or twice a day. Aaron, I got to start with this. Aaron Rodgers, is he back or did he ever leave at all?
Well, he's definitely back on the stat sheet and he's definitely back on the eye test. So
the question of did he ever leave, he wasn't playing as well at the beginning of the season. I mean, I know he would poo-poo that. Mike McCarthy doesn't want to talk about it, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't deny what you saw on tape earlier this year and for good stretches of last year. You know, a guy who was kind of watching the rush and not trusting his receivers and wasn't quite as productive as he had been, but that's all gone away now. There's no doubt about it. They've still had issues once or twice down the stretch here of the way they've started games on offense. And a lot of that has been due to Rodgers, but for the most part, you know, since basically that Philadelphia game, he has been on fire, and that's a big reason for this three-game winning streak, no doubt.
And he had a big second half against the Bears in Week 7, which should forever be known as the Davante Adams game. If you look back at the numbers he put up in that game. Now, Jordy Nelson in that game had one catch for 9 yards. And Aaron said after the game that, you know, he saw Tracy Porter was over there and he just decided not to even bother. And I imagine Porter will be on Nelson again. But Jordy's put up some huge numbers in the last few games. How has that kind of receiver trifecta been kind of flowing the last 3 weeks as Aaron Rodgers has been playing better as well?
Yeah, they haven't really tried to get Jordy vertical in the way that we saw back in 2014. And that's caused a lot of, I think, consternation among the fan base. But look, I mean, you can't deny with the production that you mentioned Jordy's numbers have been ridiculous these last few weeks. He's leading the league in touchdown receptions. He's an absolute threat in the red zone. And I do think, you know, I buy what Rodgers is saying there. In that game, Davante Adams was so hot, there was no reason to go anywhere else. But I tend to think that's, you know, this is how they're going to operate. Davante Adams is your kind of big strike guy, the guy who they're going to push the ball downfield to. And teams have started to recognize that, and they've started rolling coverage his way. And because of that, that's opened up things underneath for Jordy Nelson, who's become much more of a, you know, it's a dirty word, but much more of a possession receiver. He's a guy who's doing a lot of dirty work. They're playing him from the slot a lot more. Stuff that, you know, maybe traditionally we're not used to seeing from Jordy, at least not recently. But as the year has progressed and the way they've kind of worked the progressions, it just seems that that's the way it's worked out. And it's like you cannot argue with the results.
Well, if he wants to go vertical on Sunday, he'll have opportunities because the Bears safeties have struggled a little bit. They gave up a couple big plays against Detroit. The other guy, skill player, I wanted to ask you about is Ty Montgomery. And he had a big 30-yard run against the Bears. That was kind of the first game in Week 7 that he was the quote-unquote like lead back in that backfield, and he had a nice second half.
Right.
I know they have Christian Michael as well. He didn't get going very much last week. What do you make of Ty Montgomery in the running game? And then the follow-up to that is, does it matter, the running game, if Aaron Rodgers is playing the way he is?
Well, the second part is pretty easy. It really doesn't. I mean, because they've made such a, you know, commitment to using their short passing game as an extension of the running game, when they haven't been able to get things going on the ground, which has been often this year, they just go to some of that stuff in the flat. They'll do little dart and arrow routes, and they'll just get the ball in receivers' hands out in the open and let them go to work. As far as Ty Montgomery and the running game, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, like, he did get going against the Bears, and it looked like, okay, this kid should be fed the ball. He's a playmaker. He's a positive play waiting to happen. Just get him the ball. But for whatever reason, the Packers never really kind of went there. They never really fed him the ball, which we all thought watching the game, like, this guy is a star in the making. Like, we just thought, here we go. We're going to watch his ascension throughout the season. And for whatever reason, I know he was dealing with the sickle cell thing and he's dealing with illness, etc. It just never really materialized until the last few weeks, especially this past game against the Seahawks, where they really kind of featured him as a running back. And Mike McCarthy, yesterday, putting it all to bed, he's no longer a wide receiver. He is officially a running back. So for all intents and purposes, he's the Packers starting running back. And I think you're going to see a lot more of him on Sunday than you did the last time.
You mentioned some of the play calling, and I always find it fascinating the way people in Chicago view Green Bay's consternation with the play calling, because Bears fans throw their hands up in the air. They're like, how could Green Bay people be upset about anything when they have Aaron Rodgers and everything that's happened?
Right.
Bears fans complain about play calling every week, and they have since the Lovie Smith era. But, I mean, everything's relative, and there have been some legitimate questions about whether it's Mike McCarthy or who's actually calling the plays and everything in Green Bay. Where does this kind of stand right now in terms of a talking point for fans and media and the team itself in Green Bay?
Oh, it's funny. This year, it's completely kind of disappeared. I think it's funny because I think for a bit at the early part of the year, it was a talking point simply because the offense was sputtering, and it was kind of, it looked very much like an extension of what the team went through last year when, you know, at the beginning of the year, Tom Clements was doing calling the plays, and then McCarthy took them back, took back those duties, and they still really didn't change much. And then, you know, beginning this year, stubbing their toe out of the gate, you thought, okay, what's going on here? But since, I would say, probably about, you know, midpoint of the season, that's kind of died away just because they found ways. They've used so many different ways to move the ball. McCarthy's really gone, I mean, every which way, trying to figure out how to best use his personnel, because there's a lot of talent on the team, and I think they were just trying to figure out ways, you know, to best utilize it. But as far as, like, the play calling and things, there's going to be stuff that Packer fans are always going to complain about, whether it's, you know, spreading the ball, you know, spreading the formation out on short yardage. They can't stand that. Fullback dive plays on fourth down. They can't stand that. There's things that, you know, McCarthy are kind of, he has the staples of his offense that Packer fans, I guess, have seen for the last 11 years, and they're just kind of sick of. But for the most part, you know, the complaining about play calling has quieted down, which tends to happen when offenses start getting productive.
Well, that's probably why it has never quieted down in Chicago for over the years.
Well, yeah, but hey, the 1 year with Adam Gase was good.
Yes.
Adam Gase is a great play caller.
And Bears fans are going to turn this podcast off immediately when I remind them that 2013, Mark Trestman's first year, when they were second in the league in scoring, there wasn't a whole lot of complaints either.
No, absolutely.
For those of you still listening, I'm joined by Aaron Nagler, covers the Packers. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Nagler. Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. The Packers run defense, they're putting up historic numbers the first few games. You know that you're not going to keep up that kind of pace. They're the only team that's really shut down Jordan Howard the way they did in Week 7. Now, Howard's done a lot since then. He's grown as a back. But, you know, without Blake Martinez in the lineup, Packers giving up a lot of yards on the ground the last few games. What's your kind of diagnosis of the run defense and that matchup versus Howard for Sunday?
Yeah, they've kind of reverted to form in that regard. I think part of that is because, you know, teams earlier in the season, when they were really shutting people down on the ground, teams didn't need to run the ball. Teams constantly got, and this still is kind of true, teams constantly get into third and longs, and they kind of had the Packers right where they want them because the secondary was in such poor shape, whether it was from just the play on the field or the injuries, all sorts of things. So, you know, teams didn't really need to run the ball. Now I think, you know, once they got a little bit healthier on the defensive side, Capers has gone back to, you know, look, we're going to play a lot of our, you know, what he always plays is his 2-4-5. You know, he's always in nickel, like 80% of the time, something around there. And they're going to allow guys, they're going to try and shut down the run, but they're not going to give up the idea of we're here to create turnovers. And you're going to get a few yards on the ground, but eventually you're going to have to throw the ball. And when that happens, we're going to try to make you make a mistake. And we finally saw it come to fruition big time against the Seahawks, because you'll notice, in that game, you know, Rawls had decent yardage. They were able to move the ball on the ground. But every time they went to the air, Russell Wilson was making a mistake, or a Packers defensive back was making a play on the ball. That was kind of a culmination of everything. I think, you know, that's a perfect example of a Dom Capers defense since he's been in Green Bay. They're going to bend a little bit when it comes to the run, but, you know, they're going to create turnovers. That's what they've done traditionally throughout his tenure in Green Bay, and I think that's what they're going to continue to do.
Aaron, to save me the research, can you break down the Packers playoff scenario and what this game means?
Oh, man. Well, it means, I tell you what, they can't afford a loss. I don't think there's any, you know, there's no doubt about that. The Packers, you know, Aaron Rodgers famously 3 weeks ago said when they were sitting there at 4-6 and people were ready to jump ship and the talks were all about who was getting fired at the end of the year, you know, Aaron Rodgers just sat there in the locker room and said, I think we can run the table. And a lot of us, I think, rolled our eyes and thought, okay, that's a nice sentiment. But not a whole lot of us saw that happening. And now here we are, 3 weeks later, they're halfway to doing it. Now, you know, obviously there's a lot of football left to be played. You know, that win against Seattle is huge. It absolutely helps them, not only in trying to get to the division title, which they're probably, you know, realistically racing against the Lions, although I think the Vikings are still in it, but it definitely helps them in the wild card. Now, a whole lot more has to happen for them to even, you know, really get in the conversation for the wild card. There's a few teams ahead of them there, and there's way too much to break down in that regard. But ultimately, if they win out, they should win the division. You have to think that Detroit is going to slip up either in New York or in Dallas, although they may not. They have been playing well, but with Stafford's injury, you're not really sure what's going on there. And they, you know very well, you saw the Bears take them down to the wire just this past weekend. You have to think they probably slip up one of those two places. And if they do, then that Week 17 game in Detroit is for all the marbles for the division. And if the Packers could win out, that's theirs for the taking.
Well, they are. It would be fitting because it seems like every year the NFC North comes down to that, the Packers in that Week 17 game. And kind of a general question, I think you'll have a really good sense of this. You do a ton of interacting with Packers fans through your work over there at Packers News. How do Packers fans view the Bears?
I don't know. I don't know what rating your program is, but I think there's, obviously it's such a great old rivalry. The Bears still suck chant is loud and proud throughout Lambeau at all times. One of the funniest parts of this season so far is Ty Montgomery. His mom came to one of the live tapings. He co-hosts one of our weekly shows in Appleton, and the co-host of the show is a Bears fan. I know, right? In Appleton, Wisconsin. It's a funny thing. But she got on the mic and said, "I want you to know something, that the Bears still suck." This is Ty Montgomery's mother. It's just ingrained up here. It's an old rivalry. Everyone knows it. Everyone, you go up to Door County, you run into people from Chicago. It's always Packers-Bears talk. I think there's a respect there, though. There's definitely, it's age old. You're born with it. You're raised with it, etc. It's not like the Vikings. People just hate the Vikings. Packers fans, they just loathe the Vikings. With the Bears fans, the Bears still suck, but we can all get a beer afterwards.
Well, I think Bears fans might be doing a lot of that the last few weeks of this season as things go. But we're looking forward to a competitive game on Sunday, at least from the reporter's perspective. And at least the Bears can, I don't know, I guess, do you think that Dom Capers is losing sleep over trying to contain the Bears receiving core of Cam Meredith, Josh Bellamy, and Deontay Thompson?
Probably not, considering.
Andy Alshon.
I was going to say Alshon. Maybe Alshon, if Alshon is activated, that he could be back out there. Although I will say, I thought Ladarius Gunter did a very good job on him the last time around. But if these guys could just catch a football, I mean, poor Matt Barkley. Barkley looks better than I ever thought he would have, given extended playing time. But he keeps throwing it to guys who can't catch. But if they start catching some of these balls, then I think that offense can move it. But yeah, is Dom Capers worried about it? Probably not.
I'm not expecting a Rodgers versus Barkley shot-for-shot shootout necessarily at Soldier Field. I imagine the Bears try to win ugly. These games have been close sometimes no matter what the record is. So we'll see what happens on Sunday at Soldier Field. Aaron Nagler from PackersNews.com. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Nagler for lots of fun Packers stuff leading up to Sunday's game. Aaron, thanks so much for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.
Big thank you to Aaron Nagler for that interview. Always entertained to hear how he describes the Packers-Bears rivalry from there. And I have said this in this podcast before, and Emily Kaplan said it too. Green Bay is my favorite place to go cover a game. I think it is just a unique spot. I love Lambeau Field. The Packers are such an interesting organization and fan base to follow. And they're smart football fans for the most part. I mean, there's every fan base is going to have their odds and ends. And the Bears, I think, are a good fan base too. But I think when those two come together, I think there's some mutual respect for the two teams. I think certainly Bears fans understand who has had the upper hand over the years too. So it's not like there could be too much trash talk. But it's a fun rivalry. But what's interesting about the quote-unquote rivalry is you look at the Bears. We were talking earlier in the show how young the Bears are. A lot of these players on the Bears don't really know much probably about the Bears-Packers rivalry. Most of them weren't even in the league the last time the Bears beat the Packers in Soldier Field. So let's wrap things up and get to our picks. Bears-Packers noon kickoff at Soldier Field. You can watch it on Fox. But really the best way is to watch it on Fox, but also have your Twitter open to Bears_Insider and me at KFishbane. And your Snapchat open to Bears_Insider. Get all the great sights and sounds from Soldier Field. Dan Mott, who you got?
I'm going with Packers. Let's say 21-14. I'm going to give them a low-scoring game because I think the defense will keep it low, but I'm going to go Packers 21.
All right, so the Packers win by 7, according to Dan Mott. I actually I picked the Lions to win by too much last week. The Bears actually covered the spread in Detroit. The question is, can they do that again on Sunday? They got to run the ball. So obvious. It's the best way to win. Got to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. But I tell you what, as good as the Bears' pass rush has been, it's so hard to get to Rodgers. He's got a much better group of receivers than Matthew Stafford has. Rodgers is playing really well right now. He probably looks at that Bears secondary. He looks at the way the safeties played last week and is going to find some holes. Vic Fangio is going to have a good plan. I just don't know if he has the horses to keep up with what Aaron Rodgers can do. Curious to see what Alshon Jeffrey does in his return and what that does for Matt Barkley. So, again, it's an important game for the Bears to keep evaluating these guys, figure out who sticks around for the future. Another good challenge for Matt Barkley.
It could also be a fun one to watch in the snow because we're apparently expecting another big snowstorm this weekend.
And that has got to be very good news to Bears ears if it's snow. They need an ugly, ugly game if they're going to want to win. So I think with the weather coming, that could make it interesting. But the weather didn't seem to really impact Aaron Rodgers last week. So I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. You know me, I like some goofy scores. I'll go Green Bay 29, Bears 16 would send the Bears to a record of 3-11 on the season if that's what happens. But hey, who knows? Bears could pull off the upset and get that fourth win. They've been actually pretty good at home this season, especially compared to the fact they're 0-7 on the road. If they lose New Year's Day in Minnesota, it'll be their first ever 0-8 on the road in franchise history. Not something the Bears want to get, look, the Bears-Packers games tend to be entertaining. It was a good first half in Green Bay, and then the Packers pulled away when Brian Hoyer got hurt in that game at Lambeau Field. That'll do it for PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Big thank you to my guests, Aaron Nagler and Emily Kaplan. My producer, Dan Mott. Go ahead and follow all of our stuff on Twitter at Bears_Insider. Check out our work at profootballweekly.com/bears and subscribe on iTunes to the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. We would really appreciate it. For everyone here at Shaw Media and PFW, I'm Kevin Fishbane. Have a good week. Enjoy Bears Packers. More Bears talk coming at you next week.